Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
Good evening and welcome to the Tattered Cover Bookstore. I always like to start off events by thanking everyone for coming out and supporting their local bookstore. It's also great to be welcoming Anne Waldman to the Tattered Cover this evening. She is a poet, a scholar, and a cultural activist. The author of more than 40 books that have been translated into numerous languages. The co-founder of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa University, where she continues to teach these today. Tonight, she's going to read from her newest book-length poem, Gossa Murmur. Please join me in welcoming Anne Waldman to the Tattered Cover.
Thank you so much, Kate, and so happy to be here and to see some friends and local supporters of local bookstores. So I'm very excited about this new book. Very grateful to Penguin for taking it on. I sometimes show up with a manuscript and it doesn't look like, you know, individual poems with a whole table of contents with numerous poem titles. So I always have to explain to my editor this is another sort of hybrid text. It's one long poem. It kind of came that way. And in this case, it's taking on the notion of archives, specifically in my work with the Kerouac School Archive, which is quite extensive. And there have been some hurdles along the way trying to convince people of the importance of these kind of seed banks. The book actually references other archives. It references Derrida's Archive Fever, where he talks about the duties of the archon. So the self-appointed archon, who's the guardian of the archive. But the frustration with, of course, the technology, with the financial support, convincing the world that this is, you know, important, as well as all the historical archives and so on. I mean, one thinks often of the danger as things go extinct, as creatures go extinct, as animals go extinct, as we're so immersed in this, you know, war culture, which seems to define so much of our reality, that there's a kind of war on memory that goes on. And so it's so important, you know, as I say often, it's important to let people of the future know, or the slime molds of the future know, that some of us were not just slaughtering each other. We're actually doing these other things. And so the archive will, there'll be the little wisps and energies that will, you know, survive perhaps a little bit into the future. And, you know, up against it at Naropa, you know, people who, it's a Buddhist-inspired institution, this notion of impermanence. You know, it's all impermanent anyway, so what's the big fuss? And, you know, fighting that kind of mentality. Or, but for me, primarily, it's this sense of the war on memory, the master narratives that we have defining so much of what we know, even. And so I worked with the term, this Gossa Murmur, hybrid term, out of gossamer, and sort of investigation on what that is in science and in outer space, and then the sense of murmura, the secret sort of kind of the syndicates of samsara in some way, you know, the syndicates that the deciders are in here as well. So I conceived of this project as really a allegory. So you have these characters, you know, and I also consider it has a sort of novel structure, a narrative structure. I recommend it's read from beginning to end. I don't want to give away the end, the big rescue of archive and where it goes. And then the doppelganger Anne is a very important character, double character in the book. There's the Anne who's created by the deciders to be this kind of factotum and do their bidding, and then the original Anne who's out there fighting the good fight. So just to give you a little bit of background, maybe something about this notion of archive, archaeon, archon. So the sense of a meditation, this is, you know, out of Derrida on the overreaching arche, naming commencement and commandment as nomenological principles. The contradiction, as Derrida explicates it, is the irony of an archive that shelters itself from this memory of arche and also forgets it. We grow fainter in our memory, and for the purpose of memory versus erasure, require residence and command for our archives and for a particular kind of concealment. And archaeon is the domicile which moves from private to public. And archons are those who command, who guard the documents. Poetry is by nature self-secret, but it is also fragile as document. And when recorded, falls even more victim to decay and the unknowable technology of future guardians, if there be such. And who will be present to establish voice recognition? So that comes up sometimes in our work with the archives at Nairobi. Who is that speaking? Is that Gregory Corso? He's got a pretty distinct voice. Is that William Burroughs? So on. So I'm going to just launch into a little reading of various parts of the text, sort of in sequence, pretty much. Gossamer is not used by any branch of biology, but there are phenomena soft, sheer, and gauzy, light and flimsy, delicate, tenuous, and airy. Gossamer means summer goose, the time the goose plucks winter down and lines her nest, and the down caught in the tundra, sun, and breeze sails off glistening, in Sanskrit, gansem. Probably a time some humans collected either the goose or down for themselves. For other species, gossamer is always transient, turns more tensile, pliant, or rigid. That's the fabric of inner bones and muscles and arteries. Moth cocoons, caddis fly catch nets, woven with a protein called collagen. The gossamer bodies of plants, dandelion fluff or cotton, are of cellulose. Cellulose is a complex sugar. A way pliancy can supplant stiffness, the way tensile strength prevents fractures. Some gossamers have extension, distance divided by original length, and the questions, stretch until you break, stretch until you cannot snap back, stretch until you reach some threshold of safety. Once how delicate the gauze that adheres to and flicks off identity, flips it, becoming cartography, gossamer, occasions a transgressive vein, a body poetics with a bifurcated protagonist indicating two simultaneous and alternating realities, often alarming she and she. By way of a mundane duplicata experienced, I noticed she had a funny day glow wig on. She said my name when asked hers. I discovered my credit union had another client with my exact name. At one point, our accounts had become transposed. I thought of Borges and his doubles and Thomas Mann's The Transposed Heads. I fantasized about this meticulous, oddly coiffed other and how she might spend my money and how I might spend hers. Bodies in a materia infinitum, wood that levels down to charnel ground, wood where all detritus grinds down. Sing you here, my duplicata. I will find you here. We will spend our phantom money. We will meet without name, without body, without debt, but that of past action in nominative karma. Who did what to whom? I will be your other wisp of consciousness, and you will be mine in token of our name, a rare coinage. And she was the trigger, the apparatus of my composite allegorical destruction, or rather, of all I cared about in the mundane world, which was the survival and oral archive of an excellent poetry and record of a temporary autonomous zone from which it emanated, close to a high altitude divide. And she was a grand infinitum, a robotic tool of the fits and starts of the dread deciders who, in a trajectory of willful ignorance and anti-art psychosis, wrought their weird embryonic magic on my person and psyche and the fragile cassette and song files of a fleeting transitory poetics. I spent her account on medicinal herbs and lozenges, items for longevity. I spent her dollars on salvation, on books of remorse and redemption, on a complete revelatory encyclopedia, on the health of another, on a ticket to the opera. It was Wagner. It was Parsifal. It was on the night of the full moon. He held me and we wept. I hate it, he said. I hate this spectral life. I wish it would all disappear. I said, I love it. And I donated to numerous causes, including those toward the well-being and salvation of many endangered species whose sounds and cries and metabolic thrum and hum might soon be silenced. The Sulawesi dwarf kingfisher, the ultramarine lorikeet, the stump-tailed macaque, the Sulu bleeding heart, the Tristan albatross, the Tehuantepec jackrabbit, the zoo's box turtle, the yellow blotched palm pit viper, the yellow breasted bird of paradise, Mozart's frog, old narwhal, marbled malachite, lesser dwarf lemur, Pat Squarrow stream frog, Moluccan cuckoo, hyacinth macaw, hyaline fish, holy mountain salamander, pearly parakeet, Javan shrew-like mouse, Chinese pangolin, Dalhousie hardyhead, Dabrera's tiger. I gave her money to organizations aiding the lives of plants and of innocent victims beset by the tragedy of the new weathers. Tornadoes occurring here and there should not be occurring there and here. Surprise of tsunami, shock of hurricane, earthquake, and fires prone to these extreme drought zones. I bought hashish and other elixirs. I spent carefully. I spent wisely. I spent with a sense of grace. I traveled to a jungle and washed my world away with a bitter vine. I had anthropomorphic visions. I saw demons with metal mandible parts. I saw imposters everywhere that resembled the people I knew. But if you look more closely at her ring, that is not her gold ring. It is not a gold snake ring with ruby eyes. Look more closely at the stone around her neck. That is not her onyx. Her face suddenly unglued, askew. That is not her eyebrow. I saw myself transformed and disembodied and disentangled, then reconstituted. I heard voices. I invented a new name for my publishing company, Sayonara. I was confused. She spent my hard-earned working cash on dining out, taunting me as if to say, you are poorer than you will ever be. That was it. She raised the ante on dining out. She was a classic, addictive carnivore. We crashed, or rather she crashed. I kept writing checks on our twinned account. I spent hers on salvos, on political campaigns, on candidates that furthered the existence of literature, on death and a birthday. I spent hers on an exit strategy that almost worked. I died a little, a part of my identity chipped away. I did not mind, and then I did. What are we worth? I mused. What is our exchange value on this vast meddling market? I left my marriage. I left multiple lovers. I abandoned the rock star I had served night and day. I walked home late and thought again of our finite coinage. Our value is a minted thing. I saw she who carried my name on patch and place, not far from the credit union near where I lived. There was a moon hung low in the sky. I encountered the djinn of Juna Barnes, whom I had seen frequently in this place decades before aging. Juna had morphed. She had crashed. She was restricted in her motion. Her eyes had the glow of smoldering cinders. Long fascinated by double women, I pick up the tale of the two Lilas, which presents us with a woman's view and that of a double or shadow. In one story, the woman has two husbands, a demonic husband whom she loathes and an incestuous lover whom she adores. Both women share a single lover in the other story. He is cunning. In other variants of the tale of the shadow woman, the shadow other serves to protect the woman from any defilement or stain at the hands of the demonic husband. The shadow also keeps the pure woman of the real world, separate from the lustful, passionate woman of the subterranean world. The shadow woman seems to be more like the shard of a dream. I studied the types of dreams described by Cicero, lifted from Philo Alexandrinus's De Somnius. Night apparition, oracular, enigmatic, horama, onieros, chrismastismos. There's also a sense of double universes, as time and space are both mapped separately in a Vedic cosmology, although the two dimensions are parallel. This mythology tells not only of double people at two points on a spectrum, but of double worlds that provide two layers of the spectrum of space-time. The doubles in myths or dream or illusion make possible a process that seems to protect the presenter in this life from the dangers of complete solipsism. Or you might go mad. The deciders kept interrupting the narration. They controlled the base. The deciders create their factotums. They create imposters. They wish to interfere with the desires of the original Anne. She who writes this, who struggles in real 21st century Aegon to warn the world of the impending collapse of generative language, of the decider's impulse to control or destroy the narratives that are anything but master, that are anything but fascist, that are anything but gloomy, that are anything but manipulative. They record heart and breath and tongue and pause and rest in analogs of thinking, one thought instanter upon another, and the new weathers take heed of them in our endangered orality. Spool the tape, rewind, digitize, listen. Good, 1,000 years? The deciders took Anne apart, organ by organ, sinew by sinew, and they copied these parts into the husk of the new Anne with skill and dark intent. As they did this, they would pause, mewling into their sinister autopsy. Little organ of original Anne, what can you do for us now? Little eyes of original Anne, what will you accomplish now? And you, sinews that bind operation of motion, where walk you now? Tongue that compose many ballads and odes for your time, how will you sing? They gloated in their desire to reveal the nothingness of all things and to murder poetry. They could not remove or mutate her consciousness, which stayed intact in the retreat and isolation of the original Anne. They made their copy a mockery of the original Anne, undoing the mana of original Anne, who they cast into a virtual prison while they went about their plot of alienating humans from their linguistic natures. Language would become separated, torn from its vital dwelling place. Humans would be living out history and a life of unrelenting state without poetry. The archive of the multiple voices was endangered, years in the making, to preserve breath and intellect, imagination's other place, as psychic inscription, and to let humans of the future know some of us were not just killing one another. You would never guess, they said. Look at our creation, a perfect simulacrum. And they looked to a time of acquiescence, where the populace would be silenced, where the attention span of humans ever waning would ride the waves of mediocrats and hear tell endlessly, monotonously, the slow drip of the undulating fortunes of celebrity worlds and become even more accustomed and inured to the beat and thrum of war and more in lockdown and more in lockdown. There was a decider of the fifth rank of the state of rectilinear space as it applies to a subject's metabolism. Decider of how many gold stars on a bonnet. Or for one entering the room of major decision-making, feeling diminished, there was a decider sitting behind a massive desk of protocol and power, facing windows of gray light in sad, anemic offices over which more deciders preside. Deciders of who leaves or stays, who gets laid off, who must be demoted, who closes rank. It was not a happy world. Consider Minth the spearmint, Luke a white poplar, Cide pomegranate, Lotus the lotus tree, Daphne laurel, Philyra the linden, Callisto Io. Notice the ways they morph on you. The decider stood hovering over me with menace, saying, "I thank you for your passion, Original Anne." He was making a list of all the deciding categories that Original Anne would be excluded from. Original Anne looked deep into the eyes of the decider. I would almost say lovingly, into the eye pools whose shapes within turned mosaic, congealed to bits of colored glass. She then saw within the finer particles more blocks of menacing form, relaxing, then realigning to shape and position, to the posture of the troubling things of this world. A car with recliner, chauffeur, a screen on which played a decider fantasy of decider himself, suave and buff at the top of a stair, exuding an exquisite control and lauding it over a servant at the bottom, bustling along with a tea serving and vial of cognac to fire the drink. "Up here, you idiot!" I add this murmur to you, suggesting a register of underlying voices, fond readers, perhaps gossip, something rising to a state of cacophony. In this reality, the Hayan woman rarely ventured beyond her own veranda. Life moved indoors, the translator notes, and often in a murmur. But her diary was lush with descriptions of robes and tear-stained sleeves, of lovers' faces and wiles and other accoutrements of a restricted social world. Will you meditate upon the coolness of floors? Sit by a viewing station and wait? Shift in a fold of a summer nightdress, folded light or light plays off the pool's water, koi fish shimmer, and what is ascertained of uncertainty, of delay, glints of aqueous fish light, scales like shiny pennies, dressed up illusion, tear-stained sleeves. Will you meditate upon a tear-stained sleeve? I see my own gown here, wet with tears of frustration and longing. What to do in rescue? Night after night collapsed into tears. Had no certainty of the days ahead. Identities true and false, romantic and sexual love, seclusion, the duplicata, witchcraft, social and gender hierarchy, divination, as well as a contemplation of the multi-universes out there as one gazes into the double helixes of night sky from a restricted vantage point, entwined, entangled. Two new planets have been named today. And then I thought through doubles, through other names and forms in which I could transcend the earth without moving. A vow, a promise at the deathbed of a beloved poet, elder to this clan, then assured and commanded me I must be cohesive, that I must be synchronized and strong. I must guard the archive even at this many leagues distance, at all costs, under threat of psychic murder and dissolution. I would lock myself in the mind of poetry, in the library, within the library of that mind of poetry, and preserve. She studied allegories and what within those constructs would muster courage. How a small idea might expand to gianthood. How big is imagination the deciders would never understand. She entered a chthonic castellum, a psychic prison at the instigation of others, those deciders who would use her to advantage, steal her secrets, and threatened by her power, her sharp tongue, her stylus, attempt to keep her inactive while a simulacrum donned her identity in the phenomenal world. Poetry was a threat in the phenomenal world. What was in the archive? It held a slice of belletristic time, radical and political. It held multiple discourses on the limits of the body, on unlimited and delimited consciousness. It held Sprechstimme and performance and high talk and sacred conversation. It held a new poetry and beyond. The other Anne stole into the room. She lived on the other side of the wall. The other Anne was a succubus. She bled the true Anne. She wanted to acquire the ideas and stratagem of the original Anne, the blueprints for the utopias and zones original Anne labored to create in her frenzied defense of poetry and archive and prosodiacal discourse. She wanted to acquire the root conversations of the original Anne. She wanted to hack into delicate twists of language and torques of intuition that graced the corridors echoes of the conversations of many of value to the original Anne, who spoke in twilight language, who spoke in runes, whose enigmas of tone and gesture were magnetizing. The imposters wanted to be those many, those voices in the corridor. They wanted to own them. And in captivity, pray if all else fails, and read all books while you still have privilege in the library prison world. Rambeau, you are source on the original list. Everyone abides you. Blake comes soon and next and often. Dante, Cavalcante, Sappho, Hafiz, Mallarmé, all saints of poetry, and saints also of any holy thing. Our Lady of the Pillar in mind out of sleep tonight. Saint Sephra, Seraphim, be with me. Goddess of scriptures and scriptoriums, hold fast. Simon Magnus's death give fire. Apostle Peter is watching, nary no scold. Saint Francis of Assisi suspended over earth and watching, and watching. Christina the astonishing, help my troubled bifurcation. Rebbes, mulas, take heed. Archangel Juliana heard, hold up the three-brain world. Buddhas of compassion everywhere, please release us from your spider's cradle. Peas blossom, mustard seed, oh, pray appear. Deciders, return to your neutralized stations in the shadow world. Your language stops revealing anything, instead revealing the nothingness of all things. You can summon any machine to be activated in the deciding way. At the end of the day, they always say, it's always what they really mean, that dreadful, at the end of the day, at the end of the day, a tombstone at the end of the day. Sculpting of Jupiter's gossamer rings by its shadow. This was another reach in her investigation of the nature of gossamer light years away. As dust near Jupiter is produced when interplanetary impactors collide energetically with small inner moons, and dust is organized into a main ring, an inner halo, and two fainter and more distant double gossamer rings. As when dust in the gossamer rings originates essentially in the same way as in the main ring and halo. Its sources are the inner Jovian moons, Almathea and Thebe. High velocity impacts by projectiles coming from outside the Jovian system eject dust particles from their surfaces. Observable properties of the rings, rectangular cross section, decreases of thickness in the direction of Jupiter, and brightening of the top and bottom edges of the rings. In our deciding way, a situation at day's end, in our deciding way. Across wounded galaxies, belly of our reward, a sweeping revision, embers of the rain. The judge was the wind, let the old things take over. Doors unlocked after the wounding, thinking is not worrying. I made this book of sonnets, I an island sail. I'm so in love with art that it will get me into the next world. I know this from Derrida. Archive is shelter. Archive is the disembodied voice of a palpable consciousness. Archive is a jumbled dream. Archive needs poetry you must never forget. Archive is inscription. Archive is aspiration. Archive tells many stories. Archive, all opposable thumbs we have record of, and many wisdom identities. Archive's murmur circulates around the room. Archive lets originals breathe. You can't tamper with archive. It's a strange cosmology. Archive is housed by and reanimates sentient beings. Archive is nest, is house, is reverie. Archive will hold you. Gain intellectual control of the collection. Consider cassette tape life expectancy. Water pipes run through storage space. Materials are housed in a 100-year floodplain with environmental swings. No climate control. Security. Multiple keys to storage exist. The space is not secured. Walls that leave space at ceiling height can easily be breached. Digital collections on CDs which are at risk themselves due to disk failure and equipment obsolescence. This is the sublimated test of future identity. Not portfolio, not portfolio. A poem for now and future lovers scrolled in my pillow book at dawn. Start from a murmur of persons and rise up, not like a veil of unsanctified tears. A work in love is never unsanctified enigma, if not but pure flow and consent or rip in the veil which is sanctuary for persons, be they same or other. As a waterfall never falling in the same sanctuary twice, an abode for our bodies, of union, of persons stepping up to the altar of ancestors together who were union, who were civil, who were convivial behind a veil. Step up, step it up, convivial. Show them and rip the veil off the eyes of the enemies of veil. See it another way. Declare the space to be an abode of bodies. See through the waterfall to those behind a veil that was protecting the face of other. Same face, same base, same trace, same pace, same grace, same lace, marriage. A civil veil, or it is my vow, my vows, my vow, my vows and vocables to be this same, which is never that same one in gender-constructed eros. Eros-faced marriage. We are never the same in same-sex love, but law is civil and protects the abode of bodies. A body abode, a body abide. Say it. Law is civil, or rival is civet, is civilized, is civilians, is not chilling, is civil, is not chilling. Gone is the time of boundaries of veils, or tiers, or borderlines of separating cascades of enigmas and hiddenness. Gone is that chilling time that does not witness the desire to be seen, to be witness of this union beyond a boundary, same or reciprocal or solidarity pacts. It is over, gone and done with that violent time, violent divide, over of hiding the shape of a bed, the shape of a clearing in a forest where you lie down, soft and mossy spot, and you might come together there, the ancient dark green moss and secluded spot you come to again, same and same and not same and sane. Decide that spot you come to again, decide our own bodies. You, a former hiddenness and sorrow, and lie down and come together and making do in the secret chamber, sought that place, you walked there, you found a secluded spot below the tundra where deer bedded down, where deer waited, and you stepped there and sank there on knees in a very hot, devoted love, where you rip the veil from the fear of prying eyes and welcome the presence of a natural world and say something like, as sky is my witness, as earth is my witness, come here, my weeds, and remove these weeds to our sameness. See our sameness and remove the borders to our sameness. As weeds are my witness, come, my hands, to your natural weeds and remove the fear of our sameness and see the beauty of our sameness and not sameness. Touch the gossamer body of our sameness that you know and hiddenness you know, intangible, clothing that waits by the side of bedding down and eyes you know in hiddenness. Fields of eyes, not prying, not hidden. It was natural and very natural to do this, to be this, to bed down in a clearing away from prying eyes and metabolic strangulation. Who said unnatural, this contract, a vow against perpetual wiring of denial? As wilderness is my witness, as wildness is my witness, take the vow in the wilderness. It is over. It is gone and done. It is over and done with being behind the shadow cloth of the marriage veil, behind it a valence, a balance. And what is the essence of this poetry as in music which knows no boundary? Rip the boundary that is veil, where it tunes to the body of beautiful sameness, but never the same music. Consciousness as in music, and civil, it is civil, and civil, it is a demand to be civil, as a cascade is civil, as from the tilling of fields, and this world is a cultivation of new things in civility. It is a sure thing to witness. just read the very... Dream of duality in the phenomenal universe, veil of Maya, a memory of rescue, illusion's dream, a false dichotomy, ma, ya, my, not, ya, that, not, that, I'll tear it off, pierce it, rend the veil from the other face, a gossamer web, but not a trampoline that will bounce out a spider woman's prey. Not a rubber band. Another word for strain, energy storage might be resilience, a virtue of the movers and shakers of this shimmering world. Thinnest strains so they cannot be seen. UV colored to lure, great train energy storage, efficient protein manufacture, gossamer which binds to the more rigid branches, walls, twigs, grass stems, the edges of roofs, all architectural structure, gossamer mostly seen as floating in air. Pity the new deciders. They will not inherit this earth. Leave that to the protists, those who inhabit the power of symbiosis. Pity the deciders. Pity their obsessions. Pity their sick fixation with gender control. Pity the lovers of Genji, deciders who frolic about the Shinden Zukuri mansion, while the women write of them in subdued yet passionate tones, rain on tiled roofs, women rarely venturing beyond the veranda, receiving gentlemen callers from behind curtains in their giant heaps of clothes, hiding a diary under a pillow stained with tears. I'll stop there.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fodin. We have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.